Okay.
We're at chapter 5, how it works. And you want to talk about what we're going to talk about Bill a little bit one more time.
Okay, so I love Bill. I don't want to be negative on Bill. Bill changed my life, so I'm very grateful. So here's the deal. When Bill wrote the chapter 5, how it works, the first part of it that goes a couple pages, he wrote it in 15 minutes. He was lying down on his bed where he did most of his good writing, and he wrote with a legal pad, and he wrote this out longhand, just stream of thought. This is what he wrote. And basically, when he took it to the other people, because this book didn't exist before Alcoholics Anonymous, they were having meetings. There were meetings in New York City. There were meetings in Cleveland, in Akron, Ohio, and there were meetings in Cleveland, Ohio, before this book was ever written. And because they were concerned about the way that when meetings were being carried to other places, like there were meetings started in Chicago, whoever was starting the meeting put their own spin on the program. And to avoid having the program be diluted because of the change that was happening, they realized they had to have a book that everybody kind of adhered to. And that that was when he wrote the book, because AA was started in May of 1935. Sorry, in May of 1935. So Mother's Day 1935 is when it started, Alcoholics Anonymous was thriving for 4 years before this book was written. So when he wrote this, he ran and took it to the rest of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. He took it to a couple friends, and they went, yeah, we think that's pretty extreme. We don't know about that. And he finally took it to a psychiatrist who said, you may want to change some of these words around. So Linda and I are going to read the way it's written now in the book that's accepted by World Service. And Linda's going to throw in the words that Bill originally included in how it works. Okay?
I can do it in dramatic dance formation.
So you'll know.
I'll just throw. Oh, look! Yeah. I'm going to throw things around here.
Right.
I'm just gonna emphasize the word difference so that you know that originally this is what Bill had intended.
Right. So basically, here's how it came out, and this is how it is now. This is how and Chapter 5 hasn't changed since 1938. Nothing has changed in this book since 1939 when it was published. But in 1938 he wrote this, and this is, I'm going to read the version that we have now. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path.
Directions.
Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living,
a way of life,
which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps.
Follow directions.
At some of these, we balked.
You may balk.
We thought we could find an easier, softer way.
You may think.
But we could not. But we could not. With all of the earnest at our command.
Oh, we doubt if you can. Mm. Bill doubts if you can.
With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol.
You are dealing.
Cunning, baffling, and powerful. Without help, it is too much for us.
For you.
But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now.
You must find him now.
Half measured availed us nothing.
Will avail you nothing.
We stood at the turning point.
You stand at the turning point.
We asked his protection and care with complete abandon.
Throw yourself under his protection and care with complete abandon.
here are the steps we took.
Now we think you can take it.
Which are suggested as a program of recovery.
Your program of recovery.
One, we admitted we were powerless over food, alcohol, and that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him.
Over to the care and direction of God as we understood him.
Is it as we understood him in there?
Yes.
Okay. Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six,
we're entirely willing
to have God remove all of these defects of character.
Oh, this is my favorite one.
Seven, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings.
Humbly on your knees, asked him to remove your shortcomings, holding nothing back.
Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all.
To make complete amends to them all.
Nine, made direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him.
No, as we understood him in the first version of the 11th step.
With God. Praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And step number 12. Having had a spiritual experience. As the result of this course of action. We tried to carry this message to others,
especially alcoholics.
And to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed.
You may exclaim.
What an order. I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description to the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas.
Our personal adventures before and after have been designed to sell you three pertinent ideas.
A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives.
A, that you are alcoholic and cannot manage your own life.
B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were sought.
C, that God can and will.
And then in this, the current version of the big book, it says, being convinced we were at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that? And just what do we do? And the original version is,
if you are not convinced on these vital issues, you ought to reread the book to this point or else throw it away. If you are convinced, you are now at step three, which is that you make a decision to turn your will and your life over to God as you understand him. And then it goes on to say, just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? So he had to take a little of that strong language out.
Because I hear better when people say, okay, this is what I do, rather than when people say, this is what you need to do.
Right. Don't talk at me. And that's what Bill was doing. And to no fault of his own, he had found it. Like, he had tapped into a power and he was on
fire.
He was on fire. He had been sober now quite, you know, a little bit of time. He had a little chunk of time.
4 years.
And he was still on fire and he was passionate about what he was doing. He loved it.
Okay, so we're at the bottom of page 60, at the bottom paragraph. The first requirement.
The first requirement is that we be convinced that a life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, we are almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though our motives are good. Most people try to live by self-propulsion. Each person is like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in his own way. If his arrangements would only stay put, If only people would do as he wished, the show would be great.
He may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, he may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. So basically, we'll do whatever we need to do to get what we want.
So in the bottom of the second paragraph, is he not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? Is he not a victim of the delusion that he can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if only he manages well? And the last line of that paragraph, is he not even in his best moments a producer of confusion rather than harmony?
And then the second paragraph on page 62, selfishness, self-centeredness. That, we think, is the root of our troubles, driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity. We step on the toes of our fellows, and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find, at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, which later placed us in a position to be hurt.
So, our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Above everything else, we compulsive overeaters must be rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kill us. God makes that possible.
And then the bottom of the page, the very bottom of that paragraph, the last sentence is, we had to have God's help.
This is the how and why of it. Okay, we're going to read, and we're going to probably stop, but we are definitely going to read all of page 63 if you're following along. This is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. He is the principal. We are his agents. He is the father, and we are his children. Most good ideas are simple, and this concept was the keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom.
Okay, so remember we talked about the keystone, the foundation, the cornerstone, and the keystone. So basically, metaphorically, Bill's writing constructed this picture of the relationship that we have with God, and the foundation is willingness, and that's on page 12. The foundation is our willingness to be open-minded and believe. And page 47 is the cornerstone, and that is belief. I believe in God. Without a doubt, I believe in God. And then the keystone that he's talking about, the keystone in the triumphant arch that we walk through to freedom, is that we are his children and he is the Father. So he constructed a building that we can go through and enter and into God's kingdom.
Here's the promise of step 3. When we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer. Being all-powerful, he provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. We were reborn. I think that promise is so important because, you know, when we started our first session this morning, and I talked about the Smarties repeatedly, the feeling of driving to the Big Lots to buy the big giant bag of Smarties, powerless, completely powerless over my obsession to want to eat Smarties all day long sitting at my desk. And I believe, and this is my experience, that because I've worked the program of recovery and I apply the principles of the step, I have a new power. I am no longer powerless over Smarties. I can eat one row of Smarties, and again, like I said earlier, and not touch them again for a year. I no longer have that mental obsession. I no longer have that physical allergy to it because I've let the power of God come in. I don't worship the Smartie anymore. I have a whole new power, and it was given to me here in step 3.
And then we're here, now we are at step 3, and if you know it and if you want to say it out loud with us, Many of us had said to our Maker as we understood him, God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt.
Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always.
Sounds so much better when we all say that together. Thank you so much. That was wonderful. We thought well before taking this step, making sure that we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. And I love what he says here, but I also think it works just to say it even when you don't believe it, just to keep saying it until you do. For me, that was my truth.
We found it very desirable to take this spiritual step with another understanding person, such as our wife, best friend, or spiritual advisor, or maybe sponsor. But it is better to meet God alone than with one who might misunderstand. The wording was, of course, quite optional, so long as we express the idea, voicing it without reservation. This is only a beginning, though if honestly and humbly made, an effort, sometimes a very great one, was felt at once.
And then we're now at the bottom of page 63. Next, we launched out on a vigorous course of action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once, and at once is like at once as opposed to like 6 months, followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. And when he's talking about blocking us, he's talking about blocking us from God. Our food was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. And so step four is the first action step. Basically, I can sit at a table or sit on my couch or lie down and do step one, two, and three, because they're all like a mental steps. I can write
all internal.
Yeah, and I can write a little note and surrender to God or whatever. But the first action step is step four. You actually have to get paper, pencil, sit down, start writing. And so it requires action. So we're right at step four now.
Right. This was step four. A business which usually takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. Down in the next paragraph, the second sentence says, first, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure, being convinced that self, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us. We considered its common manifestations.
Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics, compulsive overeaters than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease, for we have been not only mentally and physically ill, but we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And I hear a lot in Overeaters Anonymous, I hear it a lot, this is my opinion, that this is true. This is a spiritual malady. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, and principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it was found that our self-esteem, pocketbooks, ambitions, or personal relations, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. And basically, Bill goes through those five things: pocketbooks, ambition, personal relations, sex relations, and self-esteem. He says that two or three different times because he wants us to know those are the areas of our life that we need to to see which one of how our character defects are applying to which one of those. It'll help us sort them out.
So we're not going to, on our grudge list, we list opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal relations, or our sex relations which had been interfered with? And then there's the example of how to create your list. There's a suggestion here, an example, a direction. Make some columns, three rows right off the bat. You make three rows. I am resentful at the cause and affects my. We're not going to read all of this, but we are going to talk a little bit about Mr. Brown.
Okay, now Linda has the greatest, she has the greatest concept here, and that is, when we do a four-step I need to say to stay in columns, and I also need to stay in phrases or just words. When I start writing like sentences or paragraphs or, God forbid, pages, I'm missing the whole point.
Novels
are out. Novellas are out.
Novella.
The most that Bill has written about this, or whoever's inventory, whoever's inventory Bill's inventory. The most he's written about it is 19 words.
Right. Mr. Brown gets 19 words. If you count that tiny little section under the cause for Mr. Brown, there are 19 words there. And in 19 words, we clearly see Mr. Brown is a full-blown jerk. He's a total jerk.
He's a toady.
Yeah. And he probably deserves to get his nose broken. I mean,
right.
It's real easy. But what is so amazing is that has come across in 19 words. I didn't have to read 6 pages of why, you know, my mom's to blame for all of my problems. I can write it down in 19 words or less, maybe a little bit more. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, and that's really helpful because I can't tell you how many times somebody's come to me with their inventory and it's in a format I can't work with because it's like, oh, wait, I need a list of people you've hurt. Well, wait, I need a list of what part of your life it's affecting. But wait, I need a list of your character defects. Without that stuff, I can't help you with step 6 and 7, and I can't help you with 8 and 9.
Absolutely.
But this format is awesome, so stay with this format. Then we're going to skip down to page 6. We're still on page 65, bottom sentence. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. This is not where I try to look good.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Okay.
To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome, this is at 66, the usual outcome was that most people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse, and then we were sore at ourselves. But the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived.
And then the next paragraph is just talking about resentments. And it's very valuable. We're going to read the whole paragraph, mm-hmm. but then we're going to talk a little bit about it. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours we might have been worthwhile. But with the alcoholic compulsive overeater, whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, the business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. Fatal is fatal. Like, it's not like, gosh, kind of injurious or inconvenient. It's flippin' fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the Spirit.
Right.
So basically, I just wanted to say that when every now and then I do a 4-step workshop thing, and one time I did it a long time ago, like probably 10 years ago in Orange County, and I do it with my friend Colleen, and Colleen and I were giving directions about doing a list of resentments, and a lady raised her hand, a lovely lady raised her hand, said, well, I don't have any resentments, and we said, well, okay, list the people who piss you off, and she got extra paper. Because when I say resentment, you may hear something that you don't relate to. So I can just tell you from my experience, when I first came into program, I didn't really understand resentment, the concept of resentment. I understood that people were pissing me off. And I was so clogged up with anger that I couldn't hear that. So whatever word works for you, go for it.
Are you down at the bottom?
Yeah.
All right. I like the fancied or real. That comment right in the middle of that very last paragraph, fancied or real. I can't tell you how many fancied relationships I've had with people that had broken my heart.
Yeah.
But I related to that. But at the very last sentence, this was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, and this is so key, especially for me. I had to hear this. They, like me, were sick too. I can never go, oh yeah, I got to forgive John, he's sick. I have to realize that I too can suffer from spiritual sickness. So we asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done.
And then skipping down to the next paragraph, so we're in the middle of the page 67, referring to our list again.
And this is the cleverly hidden fourth column.
Yeah.
Some people go, well, there's not four columns on page 65. That's because the fourth column is hidden on page 67. Sorry.
Yes. So referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistake. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation has not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours and not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set the matter straight. So that's the fourth column. So next to Mr. Brown, okay, let me just go back and take Bill's inventory. So next to Mr. Brown, when he tells us all about how when Bill tells us about how Mr. Brown is a jerk and how he told his wife and blah blah blah, and then he lists what it affects. The fourth column would, where had Bill been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Well, he clearly isn't bringing his check home to his wife and their family, and he is probably spending. I know from Bill's talks earlier about spending money on expense accounts. He's not being honest. So Bill would have to write that where he was selfish and self-seeking and frightened and dishonest. And that's where this is the fourth column.
In the very last paragraph, notice that the word fear is bracketed alongside the difficulties with Mr. Brown, Mrs. Jones, and the employer and the wife. This short word somehow touches about every aspect of our lives. It is an evil and corroding thread. The fabric of our existence was shot through with it. It set in motion trains of circumstances which brought us misfortune we felt we didn't deserve. But did we not ourselves set the ball rolling? Sometimes we think fear ought to be classed with stealing. It seems to cause more trouble.
And it says here that we reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment in connection with them. And basically, I make a column and write my fears on the column, but you don't have to do that. You can just write all your fears out. And my responses to fear is that I found out, I had no idea that I was doing this, but like I would, I have a fear of my girlfriend dying. And my solution to that fear is that I won't contact her and say how much I love her and how much I miss her. That's my part. So when I make a list of my fears, I can do something about them.
Right.
Okay.
It says we reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper even though we had no resentment in connection with them. We asked ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? Self-reliance was good as far as it went, but it didn't go far enough. Some of us once had great self-confidence, but it didn't fully solve the fear problem or any other. When it made us cocky, it was worse. Perhaps there is a better way. We think so, for we are now on a different basis, the basis of trusting and relying upon God. We trust infinite God rather than our finite selves. We are in the world to play the role He assigns, just to the extent that we do as we think He would have us. And humbly rely on Him, does He enable us to match calamity with serenity?
And this is a four-step promise. So you get this when you do the four-step. You'll get these things.
Right. One of the things that I wanted to share in my experience with fears was I had this really difficult resentment to deal with, and I'd been sober for a while and been abstinent for a while, And I went to a meeting with a guy who just is one of those awesome guys that knows the book front and back. You say, hey, what, you know, how many times does the word fear appear in the big book? He'll tell you. Where's that part that says, you know, altruistic? He'll tell you. So this guy really loves the big book. And after I shared about this resentment, he goes, why are you so angry? Why are you so angry with this woman? And then because he wanted me to find my fear. That's what he wanted. He needed me to find my fear. And here's what he taught me how to do. And God bless this guy. He taught me to take that fear and whittle it down. Just start peeling the layers of the onion, start chopping at the tree and see what happens. And for me, this is my experience, and I don't know if it'll be helpful to anybody, but every time I get a fear, if I write it down, and what he did was I would say, well, people are going to believe what she's saying about me. And then he would say, and then what? And then I'd say, well, then they're not going to like me. And then what? Well, then I'm going to be alone. And then what? Well, if I'm alone, then there is no God. And if there is no God, then I'm really alone. And all of this has been a huge, huge mistake. And so, and that's what my fears can whittle down to. I can chop at it and chop at it and chop at it and find eventually that the underlying, the foundation of the fear is that there is no God. And if there is no God, I'm going to be alone. So that has now been my experience with fears. And I could even go back to the very first fear I wrote down. There were two. I always talk about them together. One was my dad dying. My dad has since died, since I got sober and abstinent. And two, Armageddon. Don't ask me why. A massive fear of Armageddon. And again, if I take those two fears and I chop at them and I chop at them and I chop at them, I'm going to be alone and there's no God. So that's my experience with fear.
Yeah. We never apologize. So we're in the middle of the page number 68. We never apologize for anyone for depending on our Creator. We can laugh at those who think spirituality a way of weakness. Paradoxically, it is the way of strength. The verdict of the ages is that faith means courage. All men of faith have courage. They trust their God. We never apologize for God. Instead, we let Him demonstrate through us what He can do. We ask Him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what He would have us be. At once we commence to outgrow fear. Like, wow! At once we commence to outgrow fear. It's not scary and hard anymore. Okay, so
this next part is about it, a lot of people refer to this next piece as the sex inventory. I like to refer to this piece as the relationship inventory, because it's not just about how we behaved in relationships where we were having sex, but it really does deal in, if you look at it, you're talking about people that you have or haven't had sex with. I can take this particular paragraph and where I don't really have any resentment towards, my girlfriends in high school or, my buddies. I can look at my conduct, and it says here, we reviewed our conduct over the years past. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? I don't have to have sex with someone to hurt them. And did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this down on paper and we looked at it. So for me, it was really important. And my sponsor said, look, it's not about being a slut. It's about how you behave in relationships. And that made a huge difference to me when I took a relationship inventory.
And then we get to page 70, and we're halfway down in page 70 in the third paragraph. What Linda and I do is say, if anything is troublesome, anything is very troublesome, we throw ourselves the harder into helping others. We think of their needs and work for them. This takes us out of ourselves. It quiets the imperious urge when to yield would mean heartache.
Down in the very middle of this last paragraph on page 70, it says, we have begun to learn tolerance, patience, and goodwill toward all men, even our enemies, for we look on them as sick people. We have listed the people we have hurt by our conduct and are willing to straighten out the past if we can. In this book, you read again and again that faith did for us what we could not do for ourselves. We hope you are convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from Him. If you have already made a decision and an inventory of your grosser handicaps, you have made a very good beginning. I like to say very good.
Very good beginning.
That being so, you have swallowed and digested some big chunks of truth about yourself.
Okay, so then turn the page. We're on Into Action, Chapter 6. And I just want to check the time and also do a little recalc here. So basically, Into Action, Chapter 6 is all about having done the personal inventory. So we've done the inventory, and now it's talking about Step 5. We're talking about the fifth step and sharing our inventory with another person.
This brings us to the fifth step in the program of recovery mentioned in the preceding chapter. And then almost to the bottom of the page, there's a sentence that said, the best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome compulsive overeating. Time after time, newcomers have tried to keep to themselves certain facts about their lives, trying to avoid this humbling experience. They have turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they ate again.
And then all the way down at the bottom of the page, page number 73, we must be entirely honest with somebody if we expect to live long or happily in this world.
The second paragraph. If we cannot or would not rather do this, we search our acquaintance for a closed-mouthed, understanding friend. Then we skip this next line, but we can say perhaps our doctor or psychologist will be the person. It may be one of our own family, but we cannot disclose. I love this. This is Bill. This is Bill telling himself. We cannot disclose anything to our wives or our parents which will hurt them and make them unhappy. We have no right to save our own skin at another person's expense.
Always be considerate of others. And then on page 75.
That was the middle.
Middle
of page 74. Always considerate of others.
And then on page 75. Now, just know, everyone, we're almost done. So if you're ready to just conk out, don't conk out yet. We have like 10 more minutes. And we haven't seen these questions yet.
I looked at them just a couple weeks ago.
Okay. Do you want to do that now before we do? Because basically
we can. Well, actually, this is a good one. I got this one. Oh, the girl left. It asked it. So it's okay because I said, yeah, I want to know.
Okay.
So you talked about Howe and Gracie. And then she said, I'm familiar with that, but what
is ACORN?
What the F is ACORN OA? So I want to know, too, because I don't know. What is ACORN?
Am I the oldest timer here? Is there anybody?
No, he's older than you.
So ACORN existed, I want to say, in Florida. Does that sound right? ACORN. Okay,
what do you mean by ACORN?
Well, it was a food plan. It was like HOW, except for they were pissed off at HOW, so they started their own group. Just like compulsive eaters and
all. HOW left when the OA went out of the food plan.
Yes.
That was much after.
Right. But there was another group. So, okay, in 1987, Overeaters Anonymous published, I may be off by a year, published the 12 and 12, our own literature. When we published our own literature, a bunch of people got pissed off at Overeaters Anonymous and left and started their own program. And it was called ACORN. I'm sorry that I don't have more information because I don't follow them. No. But anyway, it's just another OA. They got mad. They started their own group.
Oh, okay.
Everybody knows. I'm sure people know this, but it's my favorite part. So Overeaters Anonymous started in 1959. But there was another group in Texas, and they were called Gluttons Anonymous. And Gluttons Anonymous had less people than we had, so we got the name vote because they voted on what they were going to call us, and we won because there were more compulsive overeaters in Overeaters Anonymous in L.A. County than there were in Texas, Gluttons Anonymous. And I'm really grateful because I don't want to be a glutton.
It'd be a second GA.
Oh, my God.
Right.
Anyway,
can you imagine, you know...
Oh, my God.
Linda Brown, gluttonous.
Yeah. I'm a glutton.
I'm a glutton.
Oh, my God. Okay, anyway. I have a certain amount of pride. Okay.
And this one was brought to me as a statement. Okay. This is just someone's opinion to the fourth step. It is not the belief in a God, but the fears in us that push the presence of God away. So thank you for that.
Okay.
I totally understand that.
Yeah.
And then I think, okay, so these two are very similar, but I'm going to read them both, and they're to you.
Oh.
What do you do if you cannot believe that a supernatural God exists? Just fake through your whole program. Now, let me read this second one here.
Okay.
How would you respond? This one's a little more difficult to read. How would you respond to the reaction to the agnostic chapter where someone who hasn't found a higher power reads the chapter as an attempt to convert them into believing in God? Do you think it's possible to work the steps without a belief in God? I'm going to answer that very last piece.
You go.
The question is, this is the question I hear. Do you think it's possible to work the steps without a belief in God? And here's what I'm going to say. I think it's possible for you to do anything you want to do. Do I need a God personal to me to work the steps? Yes, that's what I need. But do I believe that you need that? I don't know what you need. I don't know what you need.
You know what? There's a wonderful story in the Big Book about an atheist. The president of the Atheist Society in the United States, no joke, was involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. He was an alcoholic, and he tried to get sober. And he was so angry that Bill and Bob had God in the meetings, and they were saying the Lord's Prayer. And every time, he created huge trouble, and they all went, oh God, go and drink. They finally got so sick of him. So he was a traveling salesman, and he went away, and he was selling something, and he drank, and he came back, and he, because he wanted to constantly argue with him, we have to change the steps, so we can't have God in the steps. You're making so many people go away because you had God in the steps. And so he drank. Now, I'm not saying that he drank because he didn't believe in God, but I don't know why he drank. But anyway, he
was thirsty.
He was thirsty. He came back, and he said, I need your help. And they said, okay. So pick a God. Pick any God. We don't care. Pick a Hindu God. I sponsor a gorgeous, awesome person in who is believes in, I can't remember the name of her God, Little Blue God, who is a Hare Krishna God. I can't remember what his name is. I feel kind of dislike I'm dishonoring her. But anyway, she believes in a Little Blue God. It doesn't matter to me. And I think you can get sober and be an atheist. Absolutely. Because the power of the ocean, go and stand in front of the ocean. Whatever works for you. However, when I want to argue, when I want to stay in that, I'm going to argue with you about whether or not there is a God, I'm not open. So I would just say, go with what you can, go with your strength. If you feel the spirit of the universe in the mountains, at the ocean, wherever you, in nature, whatever works for you. Yes, so the answer is yes. I know you can get abstinent and be an atheist. You got to pick a higher power. Some people come into program and they pick a chair because a chair can hold them longer than they can hold a chair. That didn't work for me. I want a bigger one. I need a bigger higher power. But yes, I believe you can. I just, that's not my experience. Okay,
yeah.
Is that it?
That was it.
Okay, that's it. So here we go. We're going to go with a step.
I'm sorry.
Sure.
Can you give a better explanation my understanding of the difference between selfish and self-seeking?
Oh, I love, okay, here's how I ask that question 100 times. Bill was really smart, and we're actually going to talk about that in the sixth and seventh step so I'm going to jump ahead just for a second. In the sixth step, let's go back to page 60, what is it? Right back to page 59. Okay, so in step 6, he says, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. And then in step 7, he says, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. Asking what the difference between defects of characters and shortcomings is the same as saying, what's the difference
selfish
between
and self-seeking.
Selfish and self-seeking?
He likes to fool around with a lot of words.
They're the same exact thing.
When he went to high school, he was taught to not repeat himself.
Right.
So that's why he
Common.
Goes, and everyone goes, what's the difference between principles and steps? None. He just didn't want to repeat himself.
He did not like to repeat himself.
But also, but that if you don't like that answer, I'll give you another answer.
Yeah, there you go.
So There's selfish one. Is, I'm not going to share. I'm not going to share my shit with you. I'm not going to share my cookies, or I'm not going to share, if I'm 5 years old, I'm not sharing my toys with you. And self-seeking is, I'm going to seek whatever satisfies me.
whatever it is, I'm gonna get to a restaurant I want to go to, and where if I'm gonna go out with you, I'm gonna make it my choice. You're not gonna get your choice. That's self-seeking.
Still all about me.
It's still all about me. But I don't even think I don't. I'm not sure that would be everybody's version. That's my version. Mm. Okay.
How's it? Is it Lakshmi? Is that the little blue
guy? Yeah,
I googled it for you.
Lakshmi. Lakshmi?
Is it Krishna? I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. Anyway, she's a lovely blue god. I love the idea of a blue god.
I'm sorry. I like to look at it.
Okay, so step five, we only have 2 pages left. Oh, my gosh.
All right.
Okay,
so,
page 75.
And by the way, there's two lines in that very first paragraph on page 75 that I think are crucial, or two statements.
Yes.
The first is, we waste no time. And the second is, a life and death errand. So I can't tell you how many people write that four-step. They take, first of all, they take, you know, a month to write the four-step because, again, they're not using 19 words. They're writing the novella. And then I finished it January 31st. Hey, can we get together on June 30th and read it? You know, that's not how the program is designed. We waste no time. It's a life and death errand. And here is the promise of step five.
Okay.
We pocket our pride. And this is the middle of page 75 if you're following along. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step without withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. That feeling that the drink problem, the food problem, has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe.
And then he starts to say, returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour. So here's what he's saying. He's done the, first of all, that is the fifth, what Linda just read is the fifth step promises.
Right.
And right after this fifth step promise, we've got it, we've got the promise. It's 15 minutes after we've given our fifth step, shared our fifth step, then returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour. So like a half an hour after doing the fifth step, we are quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we've done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. Taking this book down from the shelf, we turn to page 59, which contains the 12 steps. Carefully reading the first five proposals,
steps one through five,
we ask if we have omitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man. Remember the arch we built with the willingness, the belief, and that I am the child, He is the Father. Is our work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have we skimped on cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? Okay, so we're on page 76, and the cool thing about 76 is it's step 6 and 7, so I can always remember where it is. 76, step 6 and 7, okay?
If we can answer to our satisfaction, we then look at step 6.
So like an hour and a half after finishing the fifth step.
Right.
We're on step 6.
We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. We are now ready to let God remove from us all things which we have admitted are objectionable. Can He now take them all, every single one? If we still cling to something we will not let go, we ask God to help us be willing.
Okay, and then here we are at the seventh step. So He takes a paragraph to do step 6. I just love that part. There's just no, like, you can't overthink that.
Right, and you just have to think about what those things are. What are those things that are, you don't have to have a big list. You've got them. They're right there on your four-step, your behaviors. But a lot of times, and what I was taught to do, too, is if I'm having trouble connecting what's so objectionable in me that I need and what I need God to remove, I can look at the seven deadly sins. I can probably find the pride or the anger or the envy or the gluttony. I can find it there.
Okay, so when ready, and if you guys want to join me, it's the seven-step prayer. We say something like this. My Creator,
I am now willing that you should have all of me, good and bad. I pray that you now remove from me every single defect of character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding.
We have now completed step 7. It's amazing. So basically, the bottom of the next paragraph will end with this. Remember that we agreed in the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over food. And that's kind of, we're here in the book to get a relationship with God. Once we get a relationship with God, we get the power. And once we get the power, we no longer have a problem with food. For Overeaters Anonymous, it's a constant surrender. I was talking to somebody earlier about being an alcoholic. Being an alcoholic is pretty simple. But being a compulsive overeater requires a surrender that is constant and actually hourly. And so I'm grateful to be here and been able to give the service and participate in my own recovery by reading this. I feel a lot better. Thank you so much for being here. Do we have more questions? What do you want to do?
We do not have any more questions, okay. Unless anybody out there has a question. Yes.
I like what you're saying about doing these steps in a concise fashion, and I once certainly have written not just novellas, but entire authors, you know. What do you think of the workbook, the 12 and 12 workbook that we've got?
So the question is for the tape, what do we think about the workbook? And, I'm a child of the big book. And my comment would be, if it's not broken, don't fix it. And this book has rocketed me into the fourth dimension before the 12 and 12 came out and before the workbook came out. So I know for some things it's awesome. For I think it's really great for a first step. I don't know why I like that so much for the first step. And I think probably since this is an Overeaters Anonymous event and that's their literature, I'm not going to say anything negative about it. I just know for myself that this book works, and I'm happy with the format of this book.
And I'll tell you that I'd been in Alcoholics Anonymous for 3 years before I came to Overeaters Anonymous, and it just so happened that I found a sponsor. So when I found a sponsor, I had to find somebody that was attracted to me, that was talking and walking in a manner of way that was appealing to me, and I wanted to walk and talk like her. I wanted the peace and serenity that she had, and it just so happened that she also was an alcoholic woman. So I thought, oh great, we're going to work the steps out of the big book. And she said, my sponsor took me through the steps of the 12 and 12 of Overeaters Anonymous, and I answered all those questions in that book. And so that's exactly what I did, because I didn't have anything that she wanted. Trust me, when I got here, I did not have anything that she wanted, but she had everything that I wanted, so I did what she told me to do. And I loved working the steps out of that book, and I loved answering those questions, and I tried to apply what I had learned. I tried not to say, oh, I've already done this, I know all of this. I didn't do that. I just answered the questions. I didn't write a novel, but I answered each and every single question. And you know what? I could give you 100 examples of powerlessness and unmanageability, but the fact is that I needed to just write 5. Here they are. Here are the 5 big ones. And that's what worked for me, and that was acceptable with my sponsor. And I loved that workbook, and
yeah.
I used it.
Yeah.
And if somebody asks me to sponsor them, in Overeaters Anonymous, I tell them, you got to buy that book, and you got to buy the workbook, because that's how I do the steps.
And once you have worked through them, do you go back and do them again?
Well, I think that for me, being able to, I mean, obviously, like I said earlier, having a daily surrender with food is so necessary in my program, and that's what works. That's the program that's been described to me. And so if I've got a resentment, I do a 10 step. I don't need to go back and do a full-blown inventory. So, and the book talks about that. The big book talks about it. Some of us find it useful to go in for annual maintenance, you know, go in and yearly. And I have done a complete 4-step. I've done 2 in Overeaters Anonymous. I've done 2 complete 4-steps. So it's not like I've skimped anywhere. I don't feel like I've done that. And so, but have I had to go back through? No, because the purpose isn't for me to continue to take and continue to take, because I'm a taker. When I got here, all I wanted to do was take whatever you had. And now, to take somebody through the steps, to give it away, that's how I can work the steps.
I like that, yeah. So, if that's it, then I will wait.
I just got confused. In other words, when you work your inventory, you answer the Holy Work questions. You don't use the columns from the books and all that.
Right. When I did, well, no, that's not true, because I've done a complete and thorough step through the workbook. I've done the way it's lined out in the book. That's what I did with my sponsor. But Roxanne hosts this really bitchin' 4-step workshop, and I've been to it, and it's just nothing but columns. So I've done all the columns through the 4-step workshop. Absolutely. In Overeaters Anonymous, I've done it both ways. And the one that I wrote after being absent in a couple years, I still carry that 4-step around with me, because the things that were revealed at that time to me were so unbelievably powerful. And the resentments that I was carrying around at that time, I never want to forget that, because I never want to go back to having that. And I went to that workshop because of the level of pain I was in. I didn't go because I didn't have anything to do for 6 hours on a Saturday, because I can fill my day just by opening my eyes. But I went because of the level of pain I was in, and I was willing to do the work.
And well done, too.
I liked it.
The intergroup has to organize it. They're in charge.
How would we know it's yours?
Do you do it outside of Orange County, or
no.
You only do it in Orange County?
No, I'm doing. We're in Paso Robles on August 23rd. I'm doing one in not geographically desirable, but it's up there.
If you were to do one thing in Orange County or LA County, what would it be called?
The 4-step workshop.
Yeah, the 4-step workshop. But you know what? Come up and I'll give you my number, and you can. Yeah, that'd be great. You have a question?
Oh no.
Okay. No, just leaning. Okay. I think that's it. We're just going to hold hands and pray out.
Thanks.
Is that okay?
Thank you so much, everyone.
You. Yeah, thank you for being here.
Thank you for hanging in there, too.
Okay. What are we praying now? Let's do the third step prayer. All right, great. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help, of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always.
He comes back, it works if you work it.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Lord.
Thank you so much.